Welcome to Unstoppable Talk. I'm Sam Schutte, the host of the show and CEO of Unstoppable Software. In this show, we talk about business innovation with some of the brightest leaders in their fields, people who are achieving greatness, changing markets for the better, and bringing new products and services to their customers. If you're a business looking to take your brand to a new level, you'll want to hear our guest today. Adam Plyman of Gwyn Sound is a 2017 Grammy nominee who creates sonic branding to connect with customers through sound and music. Gwyn Sound has an amazing studio located in downtown Cincinnati in a historic building that was once the former home of Procter & Gamble. His resume of clients is as diverse as it is impressive. Adam, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Sam.
Absolutely. So you and I have known each other for quite some time, probably about close to 10 years here, I would bet,
when
we first met. But I guess for our listeners, tell us a little bit about Gwyn Sound and the history of that business.
Yeah. So at Gwyn Sound, we're a sonic identity, a sonic agency. So we help brands understand how to translate their brand identity, their brand character attributes through sound, right? So we help create a stronger emotional connection with the consumer and an overall effort to drive loyalty and increase recall as well from a branding side. So services from there, they'll include, they go from sonic identity. So that's think of your logo system and your brand system, but for the ears rather than the eyes, as well as podcasts on the content side and brand music. So if you just need like a theme or a piece of music for advertising, that's historically where we came from. And we still continue to do quite a bit of that work today. So
Very cool. And
anything. So basically anything where your brand can be heard, that's still in, you know, even voice casting, voice marketing, and things like that for your, you know, for your mobile assistants and things of that nature. Yeah.
Yeah. And you all are in a very historic building in downtown Cincinnati, which is called the Gwyn Building.
Right. Where we get our name.
Yes. And I don't think folks realize this, but it was the original headquarters of Procter & Gamble.
Yep.
Downtown. It's a big, beautiful building. And talk a little bit about, you know, when I have visited your space several times in the past, I've always been blown away by just it really is like Los Angeles, Hollywood level music quality studio there.
Thank you.
I feel like. So tell us a little bit about what's available to people there.
Yeah. So it's nice and hidden. We definitely don't have signs or anything like that. And oftentimes when people get here, they're surprised that that they didn't even know we were here. That's good or bad too, from a facility standpoint. but yeah, so we've got three studios here, the ballroom, the lounge, and the library now. And the ballroom is a little more than 1,000 square feet of treated acoustically sound recording space. So it's built the right way with floating floors and non-parallel surfaces. And it was built in 1986. And the control room is a immaculately large control room. Well, big for the region. And we can sit, you know, about 12 people in it. That'd be pretty packed in. We usually have like about 5 or 6 for sessions. And super controlled. Everything sounds right. It's been my happy place for 10 years now. So it's you when you're in a room like this and you listen to something you've known, something, a song that you've heard forever, typically you hear things you've never heard before, and it's a whole new level of interesting. So and then we have smaller rooms. We have a room that does mostly podcasts and voice work, and that would be our lounge studio. So it's just slightly smaller than the big studio. And then Studio C, the library, which is currently under construction. We're making it into the library. It used to be Studio C, is a more podcast interview suite. So it'll be a place where it'll be a nice room for clients to review work on a nice big screen, as well as a controlled place to have interviews or do voice work or things like that. Got a kitchen, a nice lobby, and recently updated the aesthetic of the whole place probably about a year ago from what it was. It was in dire need of a facelift, and we're glad we put the money into it because we kind of had an influx of work that happened afterwards, and so we're glad to be proud about the new look.
Yeah. So I mean, if folks work, you know, if folks are listening, work downtown, they really should stop by, in my opinion, just to visit, not only just to learn about what you do, but just to It's quite an awesome creative space, I think. And can you give us a teaser or sample or idea of you know, who are some of the brands and musicians or TV shows or something like that that you all have worked with?
Sure. So on the film and TV side, typically we'll be hired to do dialogue work, was what happens. So it's more less of the sound agency side, more of the recording studio side of what we do. So we'll do dialogue work. I think I personally did the dialogue for young Anna from Frozen for her. So like in the first 15 minutes of the film, we did that here. And then we have plenty of other TV shows that have done that dialogue work. So basically in a TV show, if the actor flubs a line or a car drives by at the wrong time and they need to go back and fix it, they call a place like ours to have the actor come in, and then you watch the film and re-record the dialogue, you know, mimicking the same mic position and the same performance. So that's what would be in the film and TV side of things. Musically, I mean, we are a studio. We do have studios. And so we've had, who have we had in here? Gnarls Barkley. I know they spent some time here just prior to a tour of theirs. Sarah McLachlan, when she came through town way long ago. and some of my clients recently, they're in the gospel world. The Collingsworth family have done their past six records here. And the second to last one we did got nominated for a Grammy. So, nice. So they do all their vocals here with me. And so was pretty stoked about that. So it's one of those, we're in Cincinnati. It's not like artists fly to Cincinnati to come to our studio to record, but when they're in town and they need a place, there's not many others like it. And we've developed a rather positive reputation by being able to deliver against those expectations, and keeping the right staff here too, I think is key.
Yeah, and I think, like you said, I mean, Cincinnati is one of those places. It's near so many other things. I mean, if they are on their way to a location in, you know, down south somewhere or even up east, they can stop in and do some like voiceover work or whatever, you know, on the way. And I, like I said, I just think that few people know that, because what floor of the building are you all on?
Second floor.
Yeah. So it's like, I don't think people realize that there's a studio on the second floor of a building downtown that where some of the audio for Frozen was recorded. I mean, that's something that a lot of fans should.
Yeah. Or Five Finger Death Punch did some guitar work.
There you go. I mean, you know, the whole range.
Yeah.
Disney fans, Five Finger Death Punch.
Yeah. Who is it? 30 Seconds to Mars too. I forgot about them.
So, and I guess tell me a little bit about just the staff. You mentioned the staff and the skills and such that you have there. I mean, what kind of background do your folks have, and how do you find that talent in Cincinnati?
Yeah, it's different for sure. Because we do treat things with, or we do approach things with an agency mindset. And it's kind of tough to find people who can understand that, and who have music experience. So it's, you know, there's plenty of agencies, and there's plenty of branding agencies here in Cincinnati, you know, supported by, you know, the likes of Cal and Procter and Gamble and these, you know, these places that cultivate these wonderful brands. So it's like, so it's a great amount of talent here, but not as much on the audio side of things or on the sound side of things. So a lot of times we'll find people, because we like to have them. We'd like to have all competencies. So if you're here with us, we love that, you know, we're not giant, we're not huge. You know, I don't know how big we plan on getting either. I don't know, you know, I don't know where we're going to cap it, but we don't plan on growing to 30 people large from a company size standpoint here in downtown. So we'd like people to be able to wear a couple different hats. You know, I'd love the people that we have on staff, if you play as well as engineer. Not that I want you to do both, but I want you to have the understanding. You know, if you're going to be a strategist, I would love for you to have at least some sort of music background as well as some brand strategy experience. I think that my hope is that by understanding both, they're able to remove their personal biases and be able to insert some sort of understanding of the process or a piece of what we would do there. So, you know, for instance, it's easy for a drummer to talk to a drummer about what they want. mm-hmm. you know, and it's easy for a musician to speak to another musician in those specific ways. So if you're able to use that when it comes to producing or creating music for the brands, then I think you're really on to something. So I we're all composers. We all write. Everyone here on staff has, you know, has, I can't, well, all but Sam. No, Sam had worked for studios in the past on a project management side, but she is not a writer. But everyone else does. And we all, not that we always have to wear that hat, but it helps us interface with our artist network as we're working on pieces, or helps us collaborate together. So, yeah, so a little bit of some sort of music background, some sort of expertise in music combined with, you know, a marketing or brand focus. And that's, you'd be surprised that if you put out, if we put out a, we're hiring, ask, we will get pummeled, because it's not a market where there's a lot of this style work, and there are plenty of people out there who would love to do it. So we have to be very smart, about who we bring on board, especially with our small team too.
Yeah. And I think it's key that you mentioned, you know, that agency approach you take, because I mean, there are other studios certainly out there in the market and just in the country for that matter that are probably of your quality level. But, mm-hmm. you know, in my work with you, because we've worked on some projects together, you know, you really are approaching it as a consultative engagement with a business. Like, yes, there's an audio, obviously there's going to be an audio component to just about anything you do, or else, you know, it's kind of like, you know, it's hard for you to shine maybe or whatever. But it is about, you know, how does this help your brand, your marketing. Maybe it's, I think we've worked on some stuff where you're doing audio for like internal training for big companies, for instance, or like, you know, training presentations or your stockholders meetings or those sort of internal things, right? In addition to public facing stuff, you know? So yeah. I think that real kind of business lens you look at it, and not just like, hey, come record some stuff, we'll make it sound good. We don't know what you're going to do with it though.
Yeah.
That is where you kind of stand out, in my opinion. So that's interesting. You mentioned music background. So what's your instrument of choice? What's your music background?
I started on piano okay. when I was really young, and that became piano and guitar, which then became piano, guitar, and trumpet, which came piano, guitar, trumpet, pedal steel, and pretty much anything that has strings that vibrate. at this point, I'm a master of none of them. And I know exactly when I need to hire out someone to get the take that I want. I play editable, is what it is. So I can play well enough that I'll edit it together and make it sound good. but yeah, so I started. I probably write best and quickest on piano. But yeah, I get my joy out of this through getting it started and then finding the right people to bring in to bring it to life. That's what I love. I love sitting back and bringing in the pros, bringing in the studs, hire the absolute best talent to just knock the socks off of it. That's what I love the best.
Yeah. So from that background in music and performance, what path did you take in your career to end up where you're at?
Yeah.
Now at Gwyn Sound.
Yeah. So it's, I always had in my head, it was like, you know, that you always have to be at the right place at the right time. But, you know, if you're at the right place, you're just kind of waiting for the right time to happen. And that's kind of the mantra I would have is, you know, I'd want to get in, especially getting into music and sustaining a career in it in Cincinnati is just, it's silly, right? It's a silly idea that you're going to make your money in music here. But what I did was, very quickly when I got back to town out of school, I started off as a music major and then switched to an engineering degree. But when I was looking for my first job, I'm like, these are the places that I should be. This is where everything's happening. And I ended up being able to get an internship. Funny enough, it was doing Photoshop work at a studio. And so that turned into, more and more engineering work and more music work down the line. But each place I went, so if that went away, when the first studio job went away, there wasn't another one to follow it up, and nor was I ready to be freelance yet. And so I just went to a place that built studios and figured eventually we're going to build a place that is going to make sense for me to jump ship and, get a job there. And we did. And so that's, you know, I was able to, it took a little over a year, but I was able to get another gig in another studio and stayed there for quite a few years, working alongside a really good producer. And we were making music 6 days a week, 12 hours a day, for about 5 years. So not much of a social life, working 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. 6 days a week. Somehow my girlfriend, now my wife, did stick that out with me. And that's essentially where I cut my teeth on the music production side of things. Down the line, you know, we eventually all, you know, we all need to move to bigger opportunities. And we decided to part ways. I decided to part ways with that studio. I ended up getting a couple different jobs, but one, the path led me to a job at Procter & Gamble that was leading virtual design reviews for packaging design. And it was a service that was, it existed to remove the high cost of prototyping through, you know, high resolution pixel walls and 3D cave environments. So you could see what your what your package would do in a competitive set on shelf, as well as what it looked like from a distance, from a macro level, like in store. And so these would get mocked up by our team. I was in charge of a few different categories here, but we'd have developers in Mumbai, and it was a global service that was run by Accenture. And so that got, so being in that, so I was hired for my technical ability and very quickly got pulled out of the technical side of it and started working more on the project management piece of it and getting to be in all these reviews with design managers, and brand managers, watching the decision-making process and leading the research, and essentially preparing all the assets and preparing the research engagement. And it wasn't but by a few months into that I had the thought that something like this on the visual side needs to be done on the sound side. And I took that experience and really logged it away and was really grateful for it. And again, waited for the right time to find an opportunity that I could work on that. And a couple phone calls later, I got started at Sound Images. And with that in the back of my head of let's take a look around here, see if this is happening and see if this could be useful here. And it took a little bit to get it off the ground, being the new guy and probably lowest on the totem pole. But very quickly, we kind of saw that was where we needed to be. We watched this is 10 years ago. So we watched traditional advertising, especially in this town, start to decline. And we needed to figure out what was appropriate to do next. So I got the green light from the then owner to develop that process and prove it and, you know, develop the competency for the company. And so that's what it did. And it took years to put together something that made sense publicly. And with the whole drive of, so to back up while this was still happening. So while I'm putting together, how a shop like Sound Images would be able to start to do more brand work, kind of develop the thinking behind it, we were still doing work for advertising and watching the mistakes be made along the way. So, you know, there were brands in here that you'd watch them. You'd watch a junior editor be making calls on music just for the feel of it, and it's based in that person's bias. Or you'd watch the CEO upend the music that was picked for the spot because they have their own personal bias as well. And it's not frustrating to us here because we get paid for all these change orders. We're getting paid for all this, right? You know, these unorganized moments. But it's frustrating to the brand, I'm sure, to say, oh, we'll find something else, and whoever else is involved. But if they knew going into it how to illustrate the brand character, if they knew how that worked in, you know, this specific campaign, or how they sound in general, if there was any sort of guide to make that happen, then it'd be cake. And so watching the mistakes be made at the same time while we're developing this process was golden. And and so it was probably a few years that we were able to get the cat out of the bag and really go after it. And it turned out to be definitely the right call, because today the majority of our business, is it comes from sonic identity and music work for brands. And also too, I think it comes a piece of that is that the market actually evolved into understanding it quite a bit better. But yeah, that's the history of kind of where I came from and what, you know, what this, I guess the beginnings of this beast. I don't know. It's not quite big enough for me yet. I'll make it next year. It'll be a beast.
Well, it's interesting. You mentioned, you know, the influence that a junior editor or the CEO maybe of the company can have. And earlier, before we started recording, you talked about the concept of removal of subjectivity.
Yeah.
And I think that probably is some of what you're talking about. So can you explain that term a bit? And I mean, how do you make sure that your branded audio is not just what, for instance, the CEO likes, but none of the customers will?
Right. Yeah. So it's definitely a balance between the attributes of or the expectations of your prime prospect, right? So your consumer and your brand character, and finding a balance between that. So if a brand comes out and just says I'm this blah blah blah, and they push out their own identity without a lens for their consumer, they're going to miss the mark. I mean, the chances are they'll miss the mark. Chances are it's not going to resonate well with the consumer. So I mean, that's what happens when the personal bias of just the brand managers take over. So finding that balance is the process that we do. So we work to help the brand gain an understanding of what tones and textures they can use to illustrate their brand character attributes. You know, so for instance, if a brand says, you know, we are an optimistic, up-to-date, sophisticated brand. Well, optimistic sounds, you know, sounds specific, right? So optimistic ends up being more major. It ends up being in some pretty approachable keys and things like that. You know, sophistication could come through in the different textures. You know, you might not be using an electric guitar or something that's too super edgy to illustrate sophistication. And I forgot the third one that I said. Did I say competent? Maybe no, up to date. I'm not sure. But so it's helping them gain that understanding of how you use those sounds in a way that illustrate that convey those emotions. And then we don't stop there. We test it. So we can do it a bunch of different ways, but basically we have to qualify that, you know, that the something that's in the key of C that is major and sounds like this is coming across as, you know, optimistic and, you know, and sophisticated. So we'll qualify that through research. And what that does then is for the musical and non-musical stakeholders, they can take that back and say, our prime prospect, when they heard this, got our brand character 100%. So that they understood that we're optimistic and we're sophisticated. And once you do that, then you're gonna have an identifiable brand that you're gonna get all those impressions each time it's being used. So it's not, you know, so your mnemonic would be a big piece of this. That if they walk out of the room while the ad runs or if their YouTube pre-roll ad, if they're looking away for a minute, you're still gonna hear that logo coming out of the speakers, even while your eyes are looking away or you're doing something else. So you're not going to waste that impression, even though they might not be watching or they'll do something else to skip the ad.
That's something I've never even thought of before, that, you know, that Sonic logo, right? I mean, like you said, you walk out of the room to go to the fridge while the TV's playing, but you still hear, I don't know, the ABC noise or, you know what I mean, the ABC news or 60 minutes ticking clock or something, right?
Yeah, you can't close your ears.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, so it's super useful. I mean, that it does come, the fact that you can't close your ears comes with a bit of responsibility as well. You know, we can't just pummel our consumers with this stuff that they develop fatigue. So knowing that, you know, you still have to be purposeful and artful about it. Same way you wouldn't just like plaster your logo all over anything, I guess, unless you're Dolce & Gabbana. But, you know, so it's not like you're going to be, you know, and my nightmare would be that if you're, you know, walking through an airport or a mall and there's just all these different logos from these different shops being piped in that are just like creating a noisy mess. Like never would, you know, I don't think anybody in this industry would be advocating any sort of sort of use like that. But yeah, so that's, you know, the that's kind of a piece of it as a whole. But
yeah, totally. And so I guess, you know, what are some of the key services or key trends that you're recommending to clients that, you know, if they say, all right, I want to figure out how to leverage branded audio, or I just want to put out more audio, what are some of the big trends you think folks are getting into and you're helping them the most with?
Yeah. Well, I mean, what we're seeing now is it's kind of the start of what I'll call a screenless world. So the interaction that is the simplest right now is voice. So you can talk to your watch, you can talk to your phone, you can talk to your car, you can talk in your house, and that's getting better and better as years go on. And so there's more and more opportunity when brands are stepping into that space to get, you know, to hit a home run, or at least to wade into the waters, and you're seeing more and more of them wade into the waters and exist in a space that previously they hadn't. I liken it similar to the beginning of digital, where brands would step up and say, we need a website. You're cool. They build a website. And then they're like, kind of fumbled their way through understanding it because they had no strategy or guide in place. They didn't have a digital guideline. They didn't have an understanding of any of this stuff. And having been through that before in the digital side of things, now that we see this in voice and screenless, it's really, and those same brands are stepping up and saying, okay, we need a strategy for first. How do we use the voice space? How do we sound in this space? And how does that apply or fall in line with everything else where we're being heard? This is something that I believe small businesses can leverage far easier. It's not like the price of a logo. It's not, you know, it's not like the price of a visual identity, or it can be, but smaller businesses can level the playing field right now because you don't have a massive out-of-pocket costs of photography and videography and everything that goes along with this on the visual side. So you can do it at a lower price point, depending on the size and complexity. But yeah, so that's what we're seeing is the fact that this screenless piece exists. We're getting more calls about, oh, like we've got a really good, solid visual identity, but we don't know what we should do here. And we kind of sound haphazard. But what this does is when you do it, so when you do have a sonic strategy in place or a sonic identity in place, you've got a toolkit of stuff. You've got a toolkit of logos, of soundscapes. You've got a toolkit of instrumentation and guidelines that enable you to activate that in the next voice activation, in the next podcast you're in your next, and basically any place you're heard, in your retail shop. And if you're imparting that brand, you know, the goal is to, when you're heard as a brand, that you're imparting those brand character attributes to get your consumer to feel a specific way when they hear you. And when it's done right, it's awesome because they hear your spot and they get that vibe, they get that feeling, they get that one of those emotions that you are conveying as a brand. And that happens in a podcast, and that might happen in your lobby, and that might happen, you know, as a pre-roll ad on YouTube plays. That might happen as a spot on Spotify comes through. All these places, it might, you know, it depends in, and it might happen from the device that you are, you know, so it might happen from your, you know, from the product you develop. There's a load of possibilities of where it can exist that you can actually get these nice little short moments of brand awareness.
Yeah. And I think to your point, it's like brand awareness, but it's also just really high, you know, I don't know what to call it, like boosted legitimacy or something. Like if you have a, you know, a podcast that sounds like $1 million, right? Which, you know, I try to make this podcast sound like maybe, you know, maybe $500,000 or something, right? You know,
let's go $1 million.
Yeah. But if you have a, you know, like for instance, I was doing a podcast a couple of weeks ago where I was being interviewed and I played it for my wife last night. And she said, well, you sound like you're, you know, a much bigger company than you actually are. Right. And that's the goal.
Yeah.
Right? It's the whole thing is like, you know, we want, and I think it's the same, you know, whether it's perhaps the sounds that your app makes, you know, I mean,
yeah.
Nothing is more annoying to me than if I download an app and it has just a terrible notification sound or something, right? Or to your point, the music, the voiceover or something that plays on hold on your 800 number.
Yep.
You know, those can be so corny sometimes that it's like, ugh, I feel like I'm dealing with a snake oil salesman if I'm when I call my insurance company or something, right?
Oh, and even down to the how the script of, you know, the script of how your company presents itself in the, you know, on the phone. I mean, the voice piece of that is giant.
Yeah. Yeah. And those are all things, you know, that you've all, you have done with a lot of different companies. I know I've seen, I think at some time in the past, you had done a lot of audio, even for like toys and stuff for kids, where you'll record the audio that actually goes inside the stuffed animal or whatever, which, you know, it's, I mean, it's all, you know, you have to put a lot of thought into all that audio for sure. On, I guess on the topic of podcasts, because I know that's something you're doing a lot for clients, is basically, I believe, you know, full all, end all, be all production, start to finish of podcasts.
Yeah.
What is that? How does that typically, I mean, is that something where you, even when they come in, they just say, I want to do a podcast? Because people ask me all the time, because they know I have a podcast. How do I start one? What should I do? Do you help them figure out the topic, the audience, you know, all these things as well as all the audio production? Or how do you, what process do you take them through?
Yeah, absolutely. We kind of split it two different ways. So from a brand side and a, you know, an individual or like a podpreneur side, the individuals who come in typically know what they, you know, when we get the call, they know what they want to do. And we usually just help them iron out the details on how it comes together and make it the easiest, you know, easiest production flow to get them, you know, the right engagement level. You know, you don't want to, sometimes they don't want to be sitting back writing things all the time. And, you know, we find the right way for them to bring it to life without, you know, without it being so much of a hassle to them or too much labor on them. Mm-hmm. We all have very limited time, so let's make the most of it. So that's on the individual side or the podpreneur. But on the brand side, that's where we're coming up with the creative, and typically where we're coming up with, you know, where we're producing and we're making it a turnkey solution for the brand, either from a kind of sponsored content standpoint or from a, you know, this is the brand straight up and we're just talking about the brand. Some, you know, we'll do those as well for internal clients. So there's a, in the healthcare space, there's quite a need on the brand side, when it comes to education and help people understand that. So we've seen quite a bit of healthcare, from healthcare providers to insurance providers, do their own podcast with us, as well as, you know, the kind of sponsored content side where it's, let's just make something super entertaining that falls in line with who we are as a brand and we'll underwrite the thing. And those are a bit more fun. But yeah, so on those sides of it, because I think it's more of a, you know, none of them are like putting together, from a budget side, none of them are like putting together a TV series or even a TV, you know, even a TV commercial. So remove the visual element of it and you can get some pretty creative, pretty high, high quality, high value, content, high value production, for, you know, for a fair price. But it's not, you know, they're you're not needing to spend millions of dollars to put something solid out. So the risk coming into these is very low. And I think the leveraging on the brand side, the folks leveraging their scale and leveraging, their consumers already, just positions a lot of this for success. So there's actually brands out there who have podcasts who, through merchandising offset the price of it 100%, you know? So let's say you are a hardware store and you have your own podcast, and as part of the end cap promotion you've got going on with, in your merchandising, you say, hey, and as part of that, you know, you'll get a placement on this podcast. And in turn, part of that, the budget that they put into the end cap, promotion goes to support the production of the podcast. And so there's companies that actually make money off their podcast just through the merchandising and the partnerships that they have with the brands that they sell. Mm-hmm. I thought that was like, that was one of my mic drop moments when I saw it. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. That is perfect. So they actually have a really good ROI if they structure it similarly. But the deal is, I still have to be good. You're not going to have, you know, you're not going to have an audience if you're not creating something compelling and something has teeth that is like interesting to them. And a lot of brands that I don't know if there's tons out there who've really mastered that yet. So,
yeah, I mean, I think it, you know, I listen, if you listen to just some of the most well-known shows out there that are on the entertainment side, even, I mean, they're very fully produced, and I mean, they're super well written. You know, just think of any of the real popular ones out there, or the true crime ones, or I mean, they're just as much potentially audio quality as any Hollywood show or something like that, perhaps.
Yeah.
But I think it, you know, it's really interesting with podcasts that something like 80% of podcast subscribers listen to the entire episode, right?
Yep.
Which, I mean, you know, I've seen podcasts that are 2.5 hours long. Like Joe Rogan and stuff. His will be 3 hours long, you know, when he's talking to Elon Musk and such, right?
Yeah.
And me personally, I just think, you know, it catches people at a time when they're most receptive to inspiration or learning something, driving in their car, mowing their lawn, doing something, you know, where they can listen, right? Whereas, you know, you can't watch a YouTube video while you drive,
right?
Not safely. you can't watch a YouTube video while you mow the lawn. And this is the has been the big experience for me is, you know, I'm not very great on camera, right? That's a whole other skill versus knowing how to talk into a microphone a little bit and being a decent speaker. Yeah. At least I can just cover that. I can learn that. I don't have to also be a great on camera talent, you know? Right. So there's that respect of sort of lower risk too, you know?
Yeah.
So I guess when people are, what kind of return on investment do you typically see, or what are customers sort of getting out of using, be it branded audio or the podcasts they're doing with you? What are some success stories there?
So one of the pieces is if they're already in the space licensing music and they're already, you know, and they're already consuming, you know, those sorts of, you know, so licensing music or you're hiring out specific VO talent or kind of hiring all over the map on VO talent, which is voiceover talent for those out there who have not hired VO talent before. So if you're constantly licensing different music or you know, and you're already out in the space doing this kind of haphazardly or all over the map, what it does is once you have an audio, the way we work is we don't often end up needing to license what we do. We usually operate from a buyout standpoint. So the work that we do is relevant for the life of your brand pyramid. So when it comes to like a branded theme or, you know, your sonic identity or your mnemonic, that's something that you own that you can use again and again and again and again. And you're not going to have to be paying for all these licenses. For brands that are advertising on a national scale, sometimes a single license for music, for radio, for a few markets, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be 5 digits, you know, at least, you know, like a $10,000 to $20,000 for a couple weeks of music, which is, you know, it's what the cost is. There's ways to get, you know, that down, and there's other kind of lower cost providers, but the kind of the run of the mill library music is going to run you a pretty penny. So why not have something that could cut that cost and, you know, and provide value at the same time? So that's kind of our value proposition when it comes to having your own music is it's yours, you own it. And we typically, you know, walk away from it from a buyout standpoint that it's yours forever. So
that's because you wrote it and recorded it and composed it, everything for them, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So there's no, I mean, the only people who would have ties and it depends. So, you know, those are ways out actually with us to save cost is if you want to just, you know, have us do all this work and then license it for 5 years, we can do that and you'll save a license. But typically when it, you know, that's in the grand scheme of things that's nominal. It doesn't make sense. Like why not have it and we'll use it for the next, you know, for the next 10 years, or versions thereof. And, you know, at the price point that we come in at, we haven't had to back down yet. So it makes me wonder if we're undercharging. But yeah, so, I mean, so from an ROI standpoint, they can see that year one, yeah, we spent the same amount of money that we may have spent or the same amount of annual budget on music licenses as we spent last year. But then on year two, that goes away or, you know, or maybe we spread out the budget over 2 years or something like that, but it saves an incredible amount of money while providing value, and brand awareness. So, so that's just from a savings standpoint alone, that's, you know, that's number one. But then on the second side, you know, for the point two here is that if the awareness is up, you know, loyalty is up, that those impressions that you're paying for in your marketing materials online, or, you know, on streaming, those impressions that you're paying for are actually mean that much more. You know, I can't say that just because it's, you know, real musicians playing real music that you're going to actually sell more coffee, but as a whole, you're going to elevate your brand, and that means something. You know, that means that you're going to have higher retention, you're going to have increased loyalty. It's going to mean, it's going to be more of a, you know, your mark can be more of a love mark than it will just be a logo. And if we can make that happen, then, you know, then we've really done our job.
Yeah, well put. Definitely. I'm curious, just, you know, to geek out for a moment on the audio side. So, you know, if folks know anything about audio engineering, the sort of recording quality of equipment has increased drastically in the last, say, 4 or 5 years, right?
Yeah.
You know, everything used to be, what, 16-bit, 44 kilohertz, something, and now it's like, I don't know what, triple that, quadruple that, depending on your
more than that,
depending on the mathematics of it or something. What has that, like, just basically ability to more accurately capture sound, what has that enabled you to do that you couldn't do before?
Yeah, well, for us, it hasn't changed that much in our facilities. So we've always had a nice quiet room, and we've always had nice way, you know, high fidelity ways to record audio. You know, we've got a nice blend of digital and analog gear that we can use to get exactly what we need. But what it's done on like a kind of our network of musicians and producers side of things is the ability to have the ability to hit up, you know, my favorite string arranger and say, hey, I need a string arrangement for this piece, and it needs a sound like this and that. Here's the guideline, and could you turn it around in a couple of weeks? That person used to have to go to a studio and have all these players come in, and, you know, and it would be a gigantic expense. Nowadays, a lot of these people have more of their production able to happen in their house, because, you know, because the technology's gotten better. And so that's enabled us to expand our artist network. You know, we don't have everybody on staff, who are composers, and I don't think it would make sense to do that. You know, if I need an orchestral composition, you know, I can get really close and make something really nice, but I'm still going to hire an orchestral engineer and hire the right orchestra to make that happen. I don't need them all on staff. But what's the technology's done now is made it a lot easier to turn around ridiculous sounding music pretty quick from, you know, from the mass amount of people who have been able to kind of up their game from their from their home studios. Not that everything we do is at a home studio, but there are some really, really great producers out there doing some really great stuff with us that do capitalize on that. So yeah, what it's done is it's made our network giant.
Has that even made it global? I mean, do you ever have folks in China, the orchestra in China recording something for you, and or that far away?
Yeah, actually, so one thing that does happen in China and where in the Czech Republic is orchestral work, because it's a mostly union over here. So if you need a non-union orchestra, you actually use one in China or the Czech Republic. That being said, it's been a while since we've tapped into that. And, you know, most of our jobs that have been orchestral have been okay to be union, but we put it together here in our own place and assemble, make our own orchestra and record it section at a time is typically how that goes. But you can always, and what's crazy is you remote into them too. So just like you do on a Zoom call, you remote into the orchestra and they play your piece, and you get like a couple passes at it from the whole orchestra, and then they send them send the stuff your way. So it's like a remote orchestra. It's crazy.
Well, and all the, you know, like you said, all the, you know, just the bandwidth and internet bandwidth and everything that allows you to actually accurately hear what they're playing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not something you would have had 2 years ago even.
Yeah. It's awesome. And you can still go there and do that stuff. But it's the world has definitely gotten smaller and way more connected the past few years. And it's even us here, is if I'm at home and I need to check something from our studio, I can remote in and I can stream the audio back out to my, you know, to my speakers at home and monitor within milliseconds of real time, what's going on in the studio. And it's, you know, it just makes revisions and turnarounds so much better.
Yeah. Amazing. What are some new things you think that, you know, you're getting into here, in the next year or so that you're excited about?
I'm always excited about more bigger, longer tail brand work. And it looks like we're picking up a bit of that, which is exciting. I love the discovery process at the beginning and understanding and developing the understanding of the brand and taking the stakeholders through what they could sound like and getting that feedback. And because you never know where it's going to end up when you start in. Like I always try to clear my head, and I do that, you know, you definitely clear your head by auditing, you know, the brand and auditing the competitive landscape and, you know, are there any competitors doing it great? And how do we steer clear of that while still carving out a place for us? I love that. And so it looks like more of that's coming in over the next year, and we're getting more and more calls for that level of stuff. I'm super excited to then kind of stay on the front of helping people make sense of the voice space, you know, helping people make sense of how they can play in, you know, the Google Assistants and the Amazon Echoes of the world. And what might make sense for an activation for their brand there, and you know, are there ways that they could build their business in the voice space? So, would love to see more of that. Would love to dive in and do some discovery for that. So, I think this is going to be the year that we dive headlong into that. But, and then the occasional music project in the middle keeps me young.
Very cool. So, I guess just to summarize for people listening, what are the main things that you can help folks with that they should reach out to you for?
Yeah. First off, podcasts, if they need help understanding how they could use the podcast medium as a marketing platform or just a way to amplify their voice, we're here to help. Always love to have people hit us up with questions and on the podcast side. And if you're looking for a way, if you think that, you know, if you're out in the world advertising and marketing and you need a way to tie your brand together a little bit better, the sonic identity or a branded theme might make sense. It might make sense to save your license budget and be able to carve out something that adds value. It's not really just jingles anymore. It's more of an understanding of how your brand sounds and how it emotionally connects with your consumer. So, you know, even from large or small, not often do we just do the brand's mnemonic, just the brand's, you know, couple note phrase. We typically go with a theme as well as a mnemonic, so you have a little something more to work with, as well as a library of music that goes along with it. So if that seems like something that would make sense or that you're curious about, we're all ears and you know, we love talking. So
great. So how can people reach out to you? Yep.
Gwynsound.com is the easiest. So GWYNNESOUND.com. There will be a new website up here within the next couple of weeks. It has a bit more stuff to it. I'm kind of stoked to see that come into life. Awesome. As well as, I mean, you can just call our main line too at area code 513-241-7475. So
great.
Two easiest ways, and we'd love to talk to you.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. So, yeah, Adam, you have such a cool job. I think being someone who's an amateur musician, at least musician, and I think it must be so neat to be driving down the road and or just in stores or restaurants or all the places where you occasionally, I imagine, hear your work playing.
Yeah,
especially locally, it must be such a thrill. And I'd really encourage anybody that's listening to reach out, get a tour, think about how branded audio might strengthen what you're doing out in the marketplace. Your competitors are doing it, and perhaps it's time to think about catching up. So thanks again, Adam, for being on the show and telling us your story. And it was great having you.
Yeah, thanks, Sam. My pleasure, man.
Thank you for tuning in to Unstoppable Talk. We hope you enjoyed today's podcast. If you did, be sure to support the show by leaving a 5-star review on iTunes. And learn more about this show by heading over to unstoppablesoftware.com. Until next time, keep innovating.